Hi, everyone. We're so happy you could join us here on Advanced Studio Classroom. And today and tomorrow, we're going to be discussing our parenting article. And we hope that you have your magazine with you or your digital device. And if you do, you can turn to page 12 in your magazine so you can follow along as we discuss it. My name is Linda, and I'm happy to be your host today. And I have two very fine guests with me in the studio today.
Hi, my name is Pam, and it's wonderful to be back in the studio again as we look at this parenting article today.
And Pam is one of our editors for the Advance magazine.
That's right.
And also?
Simon, and I am very anxious today because I haven't been on Advanced Radio for quite a while, but it's nice to be back.
Well, don't be anxious. You know, it doesn't work when you tell somebody that, right? Don't be anxious.
Getting more nervous right now.
Well, we have a very interesting article that we're going to be discussing. Okay, what usually brings up feelings of anxiety in you as an adult?
I think anything that's new that you're not familiar with can cause me to have feelings of anxiety, a little bit of nervousness, a little bit of fear, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I think things that are unexpected can make you feel anxious, but I also think that things that are beyond your control or things you can't control can make you feel anxious.
Right. And I agree with both of you. I think that's the major thing that brings about anxiety in us. And also, in children, we're going to be talking about anxiety in children. And have you seen an anxious child?
Yes, you know, if you are a parent out there listening, and if you have more than one child, you know that children are usually very different, even in the same home. And we had that experience. We have one who's very kind of carefree, kind of laid back, but the other needs a routine. She needs a good routine, and anytime we would change things up at home or throw a surprise at her, she would become very stressed. She would become anxious.
Simon, you've done a lot of teaching of children. What kind of signs of anxiety have you seen?
Oh, that's a tough question.
I know, I'm sorry.
I suppose, you know, symptoms of anxiety, you actually just sort of see it in the body language of people often, like if they're withdrawn or they don't want to engage with the group or participate in different activities, you usually know something's sort of wrong, particularly if children are younger. But you also get a lot of sort of like nervous behaviors, like especially with little children, like, you know, they don't want to put their backpack in their little storage space because they want to keep their backpack with them. And
that's a feeling
like that.
Of security, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Know.
So they're basically looking to control or have like whatever familiar things with them they can, right?
Right. Okay, well, good. Well, let's turn to page 12, and we're going to read part of our article. We're going to start in the left-hand column on page 12 and read to about the middle of the page.
Overcoming anxiety issues in children. The Mayo Clinic offers advice for parents of children with anxiety-related problems. Dear Mayo Clinic, my 9-year-old daughter always has been small for her age and never has much of an appetite. She's also an anxious child. During her last doctor's appointment, the pediatrician suggested we see a therapist about her eating habits. Could her anxiety be why she won't eat much? Does this mean she has an eating disorder? Answer. The situation you describe is, unfortunately, a common one. Anxiety and eating issues often go hand in hand, and the symptoms have a tendency to reinforce one another. It's not possible to say if your daughter has an eating disorder, based on your description alone. But it sounds like she may be at high risk for one, and an assessment of her condition would be strongly recommended.
So our article is about overcoming anxiety issues in children. And overcoming means to help them deal with it, okay, to get past something. And our article today is addressed to the Mayo Clinic. And actually, this past summer, I actually visited the Mayo Clinic with a family member who went to see her doctor there. It's a very famous research hospital, and people from all over the world visit the Mayo Clinic for various medical problems. It is blocks and blocks big. I mean, covers many blocks. I mean, it's a huge, huge complex, and it's very interesting. A lot of restaurants, a lot of shopping within the Mayo Clinic and within its properties, and it's just unbelievably huge. And the doctors are very, very well-trained and very professional. It was actually started by two brothers whose father was a doctor, kind of a country doctor. And the community asked them to start the Mayo Clinic after there was like a tornado, and the boys were actually in the tornado, and a lot of people in this little town in southern Minnesota were hurt, and they set up like a temporary clinic in the town, and they said, if you will be the doctors for a hospital, we will help you get money for it. So the Mayo Clinic has done a lot for the United States and for the world, actually, in terms of research. So it's not surprising to me that somebody would write to this institution to ask them a question like this. So we're dealing here with a 9-year-old girl, and she's small for her age and never has much of an appetite. To me, that kind of seems to go hand in hand, doesn't it?
Right. I read this and I thought, well, that could be a problem or could not be a problem. So the parent tries to provide a little more information. She says she is small. She's normally small, but she doesn't usually feel like eating much. When we say doesn't have much of an appetite, that's what that means. But what I have observed with children, especially small children, is that they go through growth spurts. They go through times when they're growing faster and they're eating more. Mm-hmm. Then there are other times when they just don't want to eat much.
Right. But I think this is coupled with also she is an anxious child. And so they're worried that this anxiety is producing this lack of desire to eat. What do you think about this, Simon?
Well, I think that, I guess the description they give you of the little girl in that first section there actually doesn't seem all that strange to me.
Yeah.
Some kids just like to eat, others don't. But I think midway through the paragraph we hear that the pediatrician or the doctor for children that this family goes to regularly has suggested they do something about it.
Right, because he thinks there might be a cause-effect here, that her anxiety is keeping her from eating, and now they're concerned that she might have an eating disorder. And if you have an eating disorder, that means that there's something that is preventing you from eating, psychologically maybe, and, well, it is psychological, mm-hmm. or there are a lot of kinds of eating disorder, and we're going to talk about one of them later on. So they start the answer here, and it says that, you know, it's fairly common, you know.
That's right. I think we would all admit that. Simon has worked with children for a number of years. We have children, Linda. This is something that most parents deal with, or teachers, at periods of time. But so the specialist says this is pretty common, but these two issues, anxiety and eating issues, can often go hand in hand. They're often closely linked, mm-hmm. which could indicate a more serious problem.
Right, and also I think it's very true that if you have one, then you have the other. So it says these symptoms have a tendency to reinforce one another, and that means to make them stronger. So if you're anxious, you don't want to eat. And sometimes if you don't want to eat, then you become anxious about it. And, you know, we live in a society, in a world, especially within the first world, where body image is everything, especially to girls. I think also to boys, too. You know, when if your child goes to school and they're called, like, little fatty or, you know, have all these kind of nicknames, then that really can produce a lot of anxiety in a child.
That's exactly right, and it starts so early. I have an 8-year-old granddaughter, and she is already aware of body image. She worries about what she wears to school. She worries about children making fun of her. She worries about gaining weight. And that's unfortunate for children so young to be concerned about those things.
At 8 years old, mm-hmm. you know, that's really, it's really getting out of control, I think.
Sure. I mean, it goes the other way, too. So, for example, if you imagine sort of your typical family dining table, if the kid doesn't want to eat, you know, it becomes a very stressful situation. Mm-hmm. So we'll learn a little bit in the next section about some of the physical symptoms of anxiety. But, you know, if a kid has a sore stomach or something and they really just kind of don't want to eat, and you're saying, you know, you're going to sit there until you eat, it becomes like a stressful sort of situation that maybe creates more problems. So you can see things, like they say here, reinforcing the situation.
Right. So the description that this person gives, this parent gives, is very short. And so the answer also includes that it's really not possible to say at this point if this little girl has an eating disorder or not. It sounds like she might be at a high risk for one, and they need to do an assessment of her condition. So I think as a parent, if you're listening to this, if your child is small and doesn't like to eat, do not automatically assume that your child is highly anxious or has an eating disorder. Because there, you know, you really do have to have an assessment of the child's whole condition in order to get that answer.
That's right.
So don't rush into making, you know, any kind of preconceived ideas. Okay, well, we're going to read this next little paragraph now called Fear and Worry.
Fear and worry. A big part of anxiety is excessive worry and fear. That worry and fear can trigger physical symptoms such as fatigue, irritability, and sleep problems. In children, feelings of anxiety also frequently cause stomach upset. That can lead to a lack of appetite and a decrease in the amount of food a child eats.
Well, you know, I think as an adult, if we're worried or we have a lot of fear about a situation for even a period of time, every one of these situations is true for us too, these symptoms.
That's right. But oftentimes children cannot express to us what's causing them to worry or causing them to be fearful. As grown-ups, we usually know.
Right.
And we recognize the symptoms, but it's more difficult with kids.
What do you think, Simon?
I think that often it's not necessarily a conscious thing with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that not eating can go both ways. So it can be something that's the result of anxiety, but it can also be the result of maybe excitement. So, for example, I spent a number of years working as a counselor at a summer camp. And over the course of the week, especially younger campers, progressively sort of eat less and end up with more stomach problems. And the reason for that is mostly that they don't use the bathroom regularly every day. Because, it's scary to go to the bathroom at night, you know, if you have to go kind of out into the woods to like a special bathroom area. But B, there's so much stuff going on during the day that they don't want to leave the group or leave the activity to go and use the bathroom. So these are all things you can sort of manage them when you're aware of them. But especially these days, if you have sort of the parents taking care of the kid at home, and then somebody else is taking care of the kid during the day, and then somebody else is taking care of them in the evening, things like that. It's not necessarily easy to keep track of what the kid is doing when, and it's hard then to figure out, you know, sort of what schedule they're actually on or where they're at. And maybe kids don't know for themselves, you know, the consequences of
right.
the things they're doing.
Yeah. I think this goes two ways. You know, anxiety can cause like a lack of appetite, but you know, face it, Taiwan is in a subtropical region, and in the summertime in particular, it's extremely hot outside. And when the weather is like that, it also causes you not to be hungry. So sometimes parents maybe can induce anxiety in children because they're overly anxious about them maybe not eating. I mean, even for ourselves, too, you know, we can become worried about that. So it can go one way or it can go both ways. Fear and anxiety can cause lack of eating, but lack of eating can also maybe cause anxiety.
I guess the important message in this paragraph is that there's a connection between all of these things. So you don't necessarily
right.
want your child to associate fear with food. And in the same way, you
mm-hmm.
don't want them to necessarily associate, like, an escape from fear with food, because then maybe they overeat. And there's a just a general connection to eating, using the bathroom, fear,
right,
the routine you're in. All of those things are connected.
Right. I know I have a friend whose grandchild is quite heavy and also very depressed. And he hides food and eats it, you know, and they know that it's because of his depression and his anxiety, because of his situation that he's in. And so, this can go both ways.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean some kids don't eat or people in general don't eat, and some people overeat due to the same situation.
And so, Linda, he would have an eating disorder. There
mm-hmm.
are some emotional, psychological issues involved. But for most of us, for most kids, I'd say use common sense in looking at this issue.
Right. Okay, well, we're now going, well, I think that all of us are like, well, how do I know, you know, or my child doesn't like to eat a lot. And no, if you're trying to force them to eat it, that never really works. So it just causes even more anxiety, as Simon was talking about before, you know. So you're going to sit there for 3 hours if you have to until you eat it.
Yeah. The other thing is anxious parents make anxious children, right?
Right.
Like you think about the first day of kindergarten and the scene that leaves you, like children crying, mothers crying, and it just sort of becomes increasingly a chaotic scene until the two groups are separated and able to move on with their days, right?
Yes. So, I always remember trying to be extremely upbeat when my kids mm-hmm. had to leave for kindergarten because, you know, your feelings are, you know, go into your children.
That's right.
So you
yeah.
want them to feel excited, but.
So if you are a parent who is anxious about your child's eating habits, maybe don't tell the child that you're anxious about their eating habits, right?
You don't even have to tell them. I think sometimes it's in our body language and how we hover over them or how we're fussing over every
sure.
little thing. You need to be really careful.
It's true. Unfortunately, anxious parents often produce anxious children.
Right. Well, let's take a look at the second column now. We're going to read second column on page 12. So what to watch for. Why don't you follow along?
What to watch for. If over time, low food intake leads to low body weight or failure to gain the weight a child needs for healthy growth and development, that can become dangerous. In addition, low body weight and insufficient food intake can make anxiety symptoms worse. If an anxious child always has been low in weight, like your daughter, that means she is even more at risk for falling below the developmental curve and for her eating to become a factor in her mental health. Studies have shown that even if weight loss or restrictive eating starts for another reason other than body image concerns, any person can develop an eating disorder if he or she loses enough weight.
So we're going to take a look at what to watch for here, and it starts out if over time, okay, so it doesn't mean like 1 or 2 days here, right? We're talking about a longer period of time of maybe a few months, a few weeks to a few months. Low food intake, so that means you don't eat very much, leads to low body weight or failure to gain the weight of a child. Failure to gain the weight a child needs for healthy growth and development can become dangerous. You know, there's also a growth scale. So some children are small.
Right.
And some children, my children were always in the 90th percentile for height and weight. So I didn't ever have this kind of situation in my family. But some children are always in the bottom 25% and they're, you know, small boned. So you need to be aware of a lot of different things.
That's right, Linda. And your pediatrician will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
If you've used the same pediatrician since your child was born, they have that growth scale and what is normal for your child, normal growth. But again, I think this just goes back to common sense. What the specialist here is saying, he or she said previously, I'm not able to tell yet based on what you've told me, but I need you to watch over a period of time to see if your child fails to gain weight or loses weight. And then that could represent a serious problem.
Now, I want to emphasize the word that you said could. It doesn't mean that it does. Okay.
So, because I want to go back to sometimes kids go through growth spurts where they eat a lot, and sometimes they're not growing as fast, so they don't eat as much. So I think we need to use, as you said, common sense about this. What do you think about this, Simon?
The main sort of key word that they've bolded here to teach in the first paragraph is developmental curve. And that sentence just tells us that you want to watch out when a child is falling behind the developmental curve, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not sort of keeping up with children their age for whatever reason, it might be because of anxiety, but it might also be a cause of anxiety. And so you have to look at a number of very complicated things to try to figure out what's going on and what you can do about it.
I think that we also have to remember we're talking about anxious children. So I actually sent this article to my daughter, who is a marriage and family therapist, and she deals with some of this. And she said that the first thing you have to deal with is the eating before you can deal with the anxiety, which I thought was kind of interesting. She also said that dealing with eating problems with small children is extremely difficult to handle. So, you know, as a parent, don't let that make you feel even more like, oh, no, what am I going to do? But I think, you know, children, you know, when my kids were growing up, we always heard that they'll eat what they need. I don't know if that's always true.
I don't think so either, Linda, necessarily. If you're in a household where only maybe fast food and kind of junk food things, not very nutritious food is being provided. Now, they will eat. They will eat when they become hungry, but it might not be very nutritious unless you are providing it.
Yeah, those are all like zero calories, mm-hmm. zero calorie intake. We're not talking about that kind of, you know, I've had friends that have said, the only thing my child will eat is hot dogs.
Mm.
Have you ever had that? What happened like with your kids in kindergarten, Simon? They just ate what was put before them?
They're probably listening right now. They're all grown up. I don't want to get into their, you know, individual habits. But you do see like a number of different patterns
mm-hmm.
in different families. So, for example, some children sort of come to school like well-fed, well-groomed, cleaned, wearing, you know, fresh clothes. Other children don't, you know. They sort of show up with a hot dog from 7-Eleven in a bag that they're mm-hmm. kind of chewing on. And so a lot of that does sort of come from the routine that's been established at home or the habits that are being established at home. But I don't think that's always the case, right? So, again, a lot of complicated factors that are involved that sort of need to be sorted through if a child is falling behind developmentally.
Right. I think that's the key we're looking at here. And also remember the developmental curve, which has been established by doctors. You know, it's just a graph that shows what stage or how much weight or what height your child should be at a certain age based on their birth weight. Okay. Now, it also shows, I thought this was, I really do agree with this, that if weight loss are restrictive eating, and if something is restrictive, it just means it's limited, okay? Restrictive eating starts for another reason other than body image concerns. Anybody can develop an eating disorder if they lose enough weight.
So basically what this person is saying, Linda, is that other factors, there are a lot of other factors other than body image issues that can cause us to develop an eating disorder. I think it almost always goes back to some kind of stress factor, though.
Well, I think that you become, if they're talking about an eating disorder here, it means that we are we're paying way too much attention always to what we're eating or how we look.
Right.
I think it's important to clarify, too, that when they say eating disorder, often we immediately think of people not eating enough, like the famous eating disorders like anorexia
mm-hmm.
or bulimia. But actually, an eating disorder is just eating habits that are not normal. So, you know, for example, if a child doesn't have access to food, they might start hiding food or storing food or things like that because they're afraid they won't be able to get food when they need it, right? And that's very different from someone who, you know, just won't eat or whatever.
And that's a great point, Simon. An eating disorder can go either way. You can eat too little or you can eat too much. And many, many people say, those who suffer from obesity say that they eat when they are stressed. That's one of the factors
Right. And some children, like in this situation, they feel like she's not eating because she's stressed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're looking at both ends of the spectrum here. One that does and one that does not is quite different. Well, I want to look at the top of the next page. We're looking at this definition of family-based treatment. It says that if you're looking for a mental health provider to work with, you need to remember that research supports using a type of outpatient therapy called family-based treatment, which is, you know, FBT, and for children with eating disorders, especially younger children like her daughter here. And you need to look for a provider who is certified in that treatment approach. Well, tomorrow we're going to take a look at a very interesting study that was carried out in the Second World War, actually, and we're going to look at how we can look further into this situation and maybe have assess an issue so that you'll know how more, you know, to be more educated about how to deal with a situation you might find yourself in. So we hope you will join us again tomorrow for our parenting article. But we need to say bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.